don't need no education.
Welcome to Education Nation, where we tackle the biggest issues in American education. Your host is the headmaster of Liberty Classical Academy, Rebecca Hagstrom, along with co-host Mark Durkin. School is now in session.
Well, good morning. I'm your host, Rebecca Hagstrom, here with Education Nation on Saturday mornings at 10:30. We're so glad to have you joining us today. And I have my co-host here, Mark Durkin, who is also the producer of Education Nation. Good morning, Mark.
Great to be joining you again, Rebecca.
Yeah, it's good to see you. Well, we have an exciting show for you once again. Continuing with this conversation about school choice, last week we talked about Blaine Amendments and just the impact that they're having on the school choice movement across the country. But on May 24th, the Minnesota State Legislature concluded this year's legislative session after weeks of negotiations. The school choice movement inexplicably was forced into a very large step in the wrong direction. Only a week earlier, Senate Republicans sent Governor Mark Dayton a tax relief plan proposal of $1.15 billion, and one of the tax reductions proposed in this bill was the Opportunity Scholarship Program. The program's aim was to help Minnesota's low- and middle-income students choose the school that gives them the best education in accordance with their needs. No public monies involved at all. Tax breaks as an incentive for private scholarships.
Yeah, that's right. The program parameters passed in both the State House and the Senate. The will of the people in the state was on the cusp of becoming reality, but the stroke of the governor's pen would not include this program. Just a week later, reports surfaced that politics had reared its ugly head once again. Senate Taxes Committee Chair Roger Chamberlain, who has such a passion for this opportunity scholarship and
education.
Yeah,
he's a good man.
He simply stated about the scholarship program that it was out and that the governor simply didn't want it.
Well, joining us in studio this morning to discuss the fallout of this proposed Opportunity Scholarship tax credit is former Republican State Senator David Hahn. And Senator Hahn has served in District 48 and has been a guest on our show, Education Nation, in the past. He served 14 years in the Minnesota Senate in various capacities, including on the Education and Finance Committees. And his special legislative concerns included education, education reform, taxes, and tax relief. Senator Hahn, thank you so much for joining us once again on Education Nation.
It's good to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah. Well, on this program, we have spent a lot of time discussing school choice, specifically the Opportunity Scholarship Tax Credit proposal during this last legislative session. That's kind of a mouthful. For any new listeners, though, not familiar with this piece of proposed legislation, do you think you could explain what the Opportunity Scholarship Tax Credit is?
Well, I'll try. And people should know that other states have adopted this particular form of help. Mm-hmm. To kids that might have from lower income backgrounds or kids that have a need, or maybe the regular public schools may not be providing for them in the way that their parents or their family believe that they should. Mm-hmm. And so all it is, it's a mechanism that allows people to make a contribution to a scholarship-granting organization. Mm-hmm. So a scholarship-granting organization comes into being. They go out, they solicit donations, they form a fund, and then they use that fund to provide grants to kids and their families so that it would permit them to attend a private school of their choice. Mm-hmm. So that's really all it is. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, there's a lot of people right now that send their kids to private schools. There's a lot of people who have scholarship programs of one form or another. This happens all the time. But the difference here is this would become a more of an attraction because you'd be offering a tax benefit to people if they did that. So there's an incentive.
Right.
And I think that's very important. We do lots of things in tax policy to provide incentives to do things that are preferred. Mm-hmm. We have tax incentives for home ownership. Why do we do that? Because we think it's good for the society, for people to own their homes. So we have a mortgage deduction. So these are done very routinely, lots of different ways. And the idea of making sure that kids have, families have the ability to choose schools that are right for their kids. So important, really a path forward for a lot of people, a lot of young people. And it's really unfortunate that this bill did not make it through the governor's veto pen.
It sure is. And I'm just going to voice my own disappointment with that, especially after having seen it get axed last year at the last minute, too. And this year having, you know, a Republican and a Republican both House and Senate, I think many people were hopeful that this was the year.
Well, and I think you're right. And going back to last year, I remember talking to some of the people who were working on behalf of this initiative that said that they're very enthused because they had a meeting with Governor Dayton and the governor had had an opportunity to visit with them. And I think they may have even toured a school or and he came back and he said, well, this is a good thing. And if you bring me a bill, I'll sign it. So they were very encouraged.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
So he had made some statement, at least some of the people in advocacy of this program, essentially saying that if there's a bill, I'll sign it. Now, that was last year and there wasn't a bill. It didn't get through the process. So this year we did get a bill through the process, and maybe the governor changed his mind, or more likely there were pressures put on him to pretty much assure that that bill would not get his signature.
Oh, it's I can't tell you how disappointed I am. I think about the people who came and testified before the House and Senate Education Committees and how impassioned they were for a school choice legislation. And these were people from North Minneapolis area and where the schools are terrible.
And I've had, you know, I'm not trying to say that all the schools in Minneapolis or St. Paul are bad schools. They're not. But it is true that there are many, many people who want to have a different choice. You have approximately one-third of all school-age kids in Minneapolis that are opting out of the public system in one form or the other. They're going, or not the traditional public system. They may go to a public charter school, or they may go to, you know, open enroll to another school district, or many of them are going to private schools. But the point is that when you have a large number of people who, for whatever reason, might be safety reasons, or they might be concerned about drug dealing, or they might be concerned about maybe they want a more faith-based component to their, whatever the reason is, that there's so many that are saying the public school system isn't right for my family, for my child. And we ought to find a way to accommodate those families and those kids. And I've had choice bills in the past, and I hate to say this, but in some respects I'm not surprised to see this one end up on the veto floor, because there has been virtually no school choice expansion during the whole 8 years or 7 years of Governor Dayton's term.
An incredible disappointment. Well, in just a few weeks, the opportunity scholarships did go from being a key component in the initial $1.15 billion tax relief proposal to complete elimination from the final tax bill, as you just said. Can you explain politically why you think Governor Dayton essentially vetoed an entire legislative session worth of work? Now, you said he might have gotten some pressure. What do you think some of that is?
Well, I think if you talk to almost anybody in the legislature, it's really not a secret. There's no question that the public employee unions in education in Minnesota are adamantly opposed to school choice of any form, of any flavor. And they have been historically. They were opposed to open enrollment. You know, the law that was passed years ago that allowed kids to open enroll in another public school district, providing there was room. They opposed that law. They opposed the formation of charter schools. Virtually every single, they opposed homeschooling, everything that allows a person to do something beyond go to the designated public school they have historically opposed. And so I think that, in my opinion, for Education Minnesota, education is about salaries and benefits of people, their union members, their members. That's what it is. It's not really about making sure we provide the best opportunities for kids. They just say, by default, what we offer is the best choice. And if you don't want that choice, well, then you have to adjust your thinking. But so for them, this is all about money. It's all about political power. The Education Minnesota, one of the most, maybe the most powerful lobbying organization in the state. They spend millions of dollars every campaign season. Virtually all of it goes to DFL candidates. And what they argue for is just simply more money, mm-hmm. because more money translates to higher salaries and better benefits for the people who belong to their unit. And it's a very cynical view, but people should not confuse with the desires of what Education Minnesota wants with improving the education outcomes for kids. There's no relationship at all.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And we've even had the president of one of the largest nationwide education unions on tape. We've played it.
Top lawyer from the National Education Association. It was his retirement speech in 2011.
There you go. Yep. And he basically admitted in front of all of his peers that this isn't about the kids. This is about power. He even used the word power. Yep. It's about power.
Power and money. That's it, mm-hmm. pure and simple. And so when you have that large political organization that has got so much money, and that money comes by law, we have laws that compel people to give their money. Yeah. If you're employed in a public school system, you are compelled to give your money to these organizations. Right. They spend a lot of money on politics, and they're a huge player in the DFL world, political world. And so if you're the governor and you're trying to make sure that your coalition of political interest is together, you can't just say, I don't care what they think. Mm-hmm. And so typically, they on education, they call the shots when the Democrats have power.
And that's the frustrating thing. You know, these union dues that are being paid in the schools, I mean, they don't, a lot of teachers don't have a say in terms of which political party that money is going to go to.
Well, they don't. Absolutely, they don't. Right. And not only are they compelled, although there is a fiction that says you can be a, quote, fair share member, which means you pay 85%, but nevertheless you have. But not only that, but the public taxpayers pay for the collection of the dues. The unions don't even have to collect their dues. The state law requires school districts to collect the money directly out of payrolls deduction and send it to the bank.
Unbelievable.
So any other private organization, you know, that's you want to join my organization, I'm going to charge you a fee. I have to go and collect it.
Right.
You want to be a member of my organization. Here's what the fees are, and you can say, well, I don't think I like your organization. Right. I'm not going to send you money. Well, then I have to come back, write you a letter, visit you. Unions don't have to do any of that.
Unbelievable.
They just they compel people to sign up, and they have taxpayers fund the collection of their dues. It's unbelievable.
Well, the phrase political reasons, I think, is an appropriate phrase in describing the previous question, because according to a 2015 survey that was conducted by the Friedman Foundation, opportunity scholarships were and they continue to be widely supported by all demographic groups and strongly supported by African Americans, Latinos, and parents. So with this in mind, I mean, is it fair to say that the will of the people here in Minnesota was completely disregarded as it pertains to school choice?
Well, I would certainly agree with that. I think that not only is it true with opportunity scholarships, but choice generally. If you do surveys in the same organization that you're referring to, did a more broadly based survey of people in Minnesota about other kinds of choice mechanisms, and they are when people understand, and unfortunately this is an issue that the political left and the Democrats demagogue consistently, but if they understand what the issue is, it's overwhelmingly 70-75% of respondents say we would like that. Mm-hmm. We would like that opportunity. And I think that is the political challenge, is to get past the money and the power of the education establishment, if you will, the unions, so that ordinary people can think about this for themselves and say, do I want to be able to choose for my kids which school they go to, or if I'm an employee of a district, do I want the ability to choose whether I belong to a essentially political organization or not? Mm-hmm. These are very fundamental, I think, constitutional matters, and we need reform.
Yeah. We absolutely do.
You know, some of our listeners, okay, they're listening to this and they're asking themselves, and we talked about this a little bit off the air before we came in studio, but if there was a bipartisan support of the opportunity scholarships, and again, I believe 6 Democratic senators also voted this through initially, you know, why did Republicans not insist that these scholarships be included in the final tax bill, especially in that period from May 15th to the 22nd, where it was eliminated completely?
Well, I think you're right. That is a conundrum, and I think, unfortunately, there are a number of Republicans, both House and Senate, for whom school choice is not as important an issue as it is for me and others like me, certainly Senator Chamberlain, and there's many others. But there are some Republicans for whom this is just not a very big issue. They may represent a district that their constituents, or at least they perceive their constituents, as not really being interested in this. And because it's so politically charged, because anybody who says, I'm for choice or I'm for this, they know the union is going to come after them. And so I think they make a political calculation. Do I want to pick a fight over this issue that maybe it's something my district doesn't really care about? Mm-hmm. And yet, if I vote for this or I advocate for it, I'm going to have this fight with these folks. And do I really want to do that? So I think there, and it may also be that there is not as strong an understanding among some Republicans as to what are the dynamics of this and why it is important. The mechanics are certainly important, but there's philosophical reasons why we as Republicans particularly, but why as a political society, we ought to be supporting choice as a fundamental mechanism in education. But it has become very partisan, and I think there are just some Republicans that get a little skittish about that and choose to invest their time in other things.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, Mark, I know that you mentioned that you had done some tweeting and some of the comments that you got regarding these opportunity scholarships. It seems that the Democrats, and you mentioned this, Senator Han yourself, that there is some misinformation about what these are really about. And that's to say it lightly. So maybe you could talk to us a little bit about what some of that misinformation is that the left tends to put out there, or that the teachers unions tend to put out there on this topic.
Well, generally on school choice, there's a couple arguments they make. They say any money that ends up being used in a choice mechanism, and if somebody chooses a school that is not the traditional public school, then you are, quote, stealing money from the school system, and then everybody suffers. Mm-hmm. And which is truly a fiction, because if we have a system that says that the money follows the student, essentially, so that there's a formula, every student brings so much money to the education school district that they belong to, and so it's whatever the amount is. I don't know what it is precisely this year, but it's a lot. And so if that student decides to leave the Minneapolis Public Schools and go to the Edina Public Schools, well, that money goes with the student to mm-hmm. Edina. Mm-hmm. Nobody seems to be too concerned about that, although when that came about, the union certainly opposed that.
Right, mm-hmm. right.
But in a choice mechanism, that funding would not go to the school, or it may leave altogether. Mm-hmm. And with an opportunity scholarship, even though there's no public dollars involved, you're not right. talking about sending public money to any school,
right.
but there'd be the absence of that funding coming into the school where the student
sure.
left. So
sure.
here's their argument. They're saying, we should have this money. And if you say, well, isn't we have a per pupil formula? So if you get students, you get more money. So
right.
if you lose a student, you should probably lose
that
some money.
Money. Exactly.
Right. But that they don't see it that way. It's sort
right.
of like once we get the money, it should never leave.
Yeah.
Oh.
yeah.
And if it does leave, then you're doing great harm to the system, because the system, you know, has to survive. So they put the preservation of the system, and I would argue the preservation of their own jobs
right.
above what is best for a particular student.
Mm-hmm.
And that's unfortunate. Mm-hmm. That is a very common argument. They say, well, these choice mechanisms, they steal money from the public schools. Now, I would just say my reading of the Constitution is that we are to provide education to all children. It doesn't specify that it has to be this.
Right.
What we say is every student, every child, we need to make sure every child has a opportunity to be educated.
Mm-hmm.
And how we do it, I would argue, is a function of decisions that parents should make.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Couldn't agree with you more there. So with the $1.15 billion tax relief proposal that was rejected by the governor, a House tax bill now includes a $650 million tax cut, with an education bill that includes about $483 million in new spending over the next 2 years. What does the GOP have in mind for this money? Do you happen to know?
Well, I did do I'm not there every day, so I'm not as intimately familiar with this as maybe I used to be. But I did talk to some people today about this, what is the provision. And essentially, the majority of the money in the Republican education bill is going to be added to the general formula, which is the sort of the big bucket, if you will, mm-hmm. Where most of the spending comes out of. And it was about a 2% increase per year. So over the biennium, it's going to go up 2% and then another mm-hmm. 2% in the next biennium. So it's a significant increase in funding.
Yes, it is.
And because it's general fund dollars, there's not strings attached by saying, well, you have to spend the money to do this and you have to spend the money to do that. So it's just adding to the money. And typically, you know, Republicans have, there's always been an increase in funding. Every year that I was there, there was an increase in funding, so it's not unusual to see an increase in funding. Democrats like it. Unions like it. Their argument is it's not enough. There should be more. Mm-hmm. You know, we need to have more than just 2%, and that's been their big, I think, point. So most of the money is going to fund that general fund increase. But there are provisions, something that they call LIFO Light was in the bill.
Hmm. What's that?
And LIFO is an acronym, Last In, First Out, which is mm-hmm. really a description of how tenure applies. Mm-hmm. If you're a teacher and you have to get employed by a school district and you were hired last spring, mm-hmm. and they say, well, this year our budget, we had to contract a little bit, and so we have to reduce our teaching force by five. Well, what they do is they take the five most recent employees and they say, you're just out.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
the last one in, the last teacher in is the first one out.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter how good that person is, how well they do their job, how talented they are. Doesn't matter if you've got teachers that have been there for 30 years and are barely, you know, going through the motions. It's strictly a seniority basis. And the way the law is currently, we say, well, when you have contract negotiations and you want to talk about how you're going to handle force reductions or layoffs, you negotiate for that at the bargaining table mm-hmm. between the union and the school district. And if at the end of the day you can't reach an agreement, then the fallback is we have this LIFO.
Mm-hmm.
Well, guess what? They always end up not being able to reach an agreement, and they always fall back to LIFO. So the LIFO light, what they did is they said, well, we're just going to change that. We're going to take away that fallback mandate. So now you have to negotiate in your bargaining sessions whether how you want to deal with force reduction. But if you don't reach an agreement, then you don't reach an agreement. But you're going to have to. But we're not going to have this automatic mm-hmm. in law that says if you don't reach an agreement, then you automatically have LIFO. So it's, I believe it's mm-hmm. a step in the right direction.
It is.
Mm-hmm. I think it will really compel the unions and the administrations to negotiate how they want to do this. And I'll tell you something, the unions, there's a lot of young teachers who are very frustrated with this LIFO system. Mm-hmm. They think that they should not be forced out of their job just because they happen to have been hired most recently. Mm-hmm. And so I think that the union itself is going to have a hard time, for example, going to a strike over preserving LIFO, for mm-hmm. instance. So mm-hmm. I think it's a good provision, and I think that we'll see how it turns out. But most of the money is going for the formula. There's a little bit of money on early childhood education, and then there's also provision for teacher licensure.
Okay.
And we're going to talk about those two things very specifically when we return from this very short break here on Education Nation. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
We don't need no education.
And welcome back to Education Nation. I am your co-host, Mark Durkin, along with host Rebecca Hagstrom and former State Senator David Hahn, as we are discussing the fallout from the Minnesota legislative session, which has recently come to an end, specifically Minnesota Opportunity Scholarships. But we do want to turn the focus, rather, to the Republican-led Senate, which was initially met with an initial veto vote from the governor on teacher licensure reform. But from what I understand, there has been progress that has made on that end, and we will let Senator David Hahn keep us up to speed of what's going on there.
Absolutely, and this is an important issue. It's been topic of lots of efforts over the years when I was there and probably continuing, but it's always the fight is really about who should be allowed to teach kids in school. And as you probably know, if you're in a private school, the private school boards essentially make decisions about who they want and what kind of qualifications they want. And, gee, that system seems to work pretty well. But in the public system, you have a board of teaching, and you also have the Department of Education, and they have rules and they have requirements. And one of the requirements, for instance, is that in order to teach in Minnesota, you have to have a four-year degree from a Minnesota teacher preparation program.
Unbelievable.
So what this means is
how
practical
exclusive
matter.
Is that?
What this means is a practical matter. If you're a teacher with a license in, say, Iowa, and you move up here to Minnesota, and you want to teach school, they say, well, gee, we'd love to have you. You got to go back and get your four-year degree.
Oh,
unbelievable.
And you got to go through the teacher prep that Minnesota requires. So this course is very discouraging to people come from other places. You also have instances, especially in outstate Minnesota, where you might have people who are subject matter experts. Maybe they had a business or may have had other things, mm-hmm. or maybe they've gone through a business career and they want to do something else, and they're willing to go and teach a class on economics or a class mm-hmm. on agriculture or something else. But maybe their degree was in English literature or, mm-hmm.
Maybe they
have a business mm-hmm. degree or mm-hmm. who knows what. Well, currently the law says, well, they have to go back. They have to go back and get their four-year degree. And so what the bill does, first of all, it does some things to unify control over licensure to the teaching board of teaching. That's number one. So you don't have this, part of it's in the Department of Education and part of it's in the Board of Teaching. You have one entity now who's responsible for everything. And then they reconstitute the board. The Board of Teaching has traditionally been dominated by teachers who are already in the club, if you will. Mm-hmm. And so they're going to make sure that everybody else has to get in the club the same way they got it.
Yep.
But so they broadened it. There's still teachers who are a member, but they've also broadened it so it's a little bit more broad group of people on this board. The other thing that they've done is they've provided for alternative pathways to become a certified teacher. They've allowed for more discretion to allow for that outstate person coming in or allow for the person in a mid-career change kind of a situation, and to provide more flexibility and put, I think, a little bit larger amount of control in the hands of local school boards. I served on a school board for 8 years. I've always wondered why it is that we don't completely just turn this over to local school districts and say, you're in charge of running this district, you're paying the bills, you're spending the money, you're accountable to the voters, you should be able to hire whoever you want to.
Mm-hmm.
And if the public doesn't like who you choose, then they can get new school board members.
Yes,
they
don't. Exactly.
So that really is radical. I mean, I understand that.
A radical but old way of doing things that worked really well at one time.
It's kind of like if we had a law that said, if you're going to go to work in business, here is what you have to have a four-year degree in business, you have to have a four-year degree in business from a Minnesota school, and if you don't have that, then you cannot get a job in business. Who would go for that?
It's insane.
So so that is a very good thing, and there has been agreement on it, and I believe the governor will sign it.
Good.
But we'll see.
Good. All right. Well, so one provision got through, and that's a good thing. So what is next, do you think, then, for the opportunity scholarships that didn't make it into the last piece that is going before the governor?
Well, I think there's going to be a continuing effort to try to get the opportunity scholarship piece moving forward. Next year is not a budget year, so the opportunities to do it in a non-budget year are probably somewhat limited because you're not going to have a tax bill, probably. But I think the issue is going to continue to be out there. It's going to continue to survive. And I believe there's more than just opportunity scholarships. I think we need to look at sort of a gold standard, in my opinion, of school choice is what I call an education savings account, kind of modeled on the individual retirement account, where you allow for people to put money and receive money from different entities, and you can use that money for any educational purpose throughout the lifetime. Yeah.
And there are states that have that.
There are states that have it. There's two or three that do already.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that I believe we'll continue to push for, and I believe that the common sense and the rightness of choice is so strong that I think it's only a matter of time before we prevail.
Mm, and that's interwoven in the fabric of our society, even from the days of the Constitution, correct?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. This is one of the things. The school choice is a mechanism, I believe. It's a mechanism to accomplish the goals of what education's purpose is. And we have to ask ourselves as citizens of this country, what is the purpose of education? And we don't have to look too hard. It's in the Northwest Ordinance, federal law passed by the same people that wrote and adopted the Constitution, and defines the purpose of education.
Mm-hmm.
And the purpose of education has been for centuries about the formation of good character, of helping young people learn what is good, what is true, what is right, what is wrong. Virtue is not something that we are born with. We have to learn it. And the founders very clearly saw you had to have virtue and you had to have schools to provide that virtue. Otherwise, you can't have a self-governing nation.
Right.
You have to rediscover that.
Interesting purpose. That that's actually law.
It's a law, never been repealed. It's never been refuted. It's simply been forgotten.
Unbelievable.
Wow.
You know, you have been very insightful with that. I bet many of our listeners, including I know Mark and I, until before the show, did not know much about that Northwest Ordinance.
Find it online. It's the first sentence of Article 3.
All right. First sentence of Article 3 of the Northwest Ordinance. Boy, you have been extremely informative. Thank you so much for joining us today, Senator Hand. We're so glad to have you. And a fun little detail is that Senator Hand's son is now a teacher at Liberty Classical Academy, and he's doing a fabulous job.
Thank you.
So for our listeners who want to get this program or other programs, go to our Facebook page or you can go to KLBB. You can look up our podcasts. And we hope that you join us again next Saturday for Education Nation. Have a great week.